The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Hey, welcome to another weekly podcast. This is Bite by Bike. He's Michael Coleman. Of course, he is the CEO of the Heart of Alabama Food Bank. I'm Tony Curry, and this show is about the Heart of Alabama Food Bank. Michael, you doing okay, brother? Everything good?
Doing great.
So we got into the logisticals of serving food, and I know that you mentioned the fact that $1 serves five meals, which is really incredible and very efficient. And we discussed some of the various challenges that food banks deal with, and we talked about seniors specifically last show, but I wanted to get in some other groups of people that you serve food to, because I think we normally think that it's socially economically challenged individuals, but that really could be anybody. I talked about my dad being part of the Meals for Wheels campaign, something that I actually paid for, but actually loved it because he had someone coming to his house every single day of the week, visiting with him and making sure he was okay. And it was a wonderful situation. But let's go to the other end of the spectrum and just talk about children who perhaps are part of the area food bank challenges you deal with.
Yeah, when the statistics across America are 1 in 6 children face food insecurity or hunger. And when it's just so hard for most of us to believe the idea that nowadays, with as much as we tend to have, that there are children coming home from school in the afternoon and there's literally nothing for them to eat, certainly nothing healthy. And then getting into, and so even in the evenings, not getting a meal. And so if they go to a school that provides them a breakfast, school breakfast, school lunch, mm-hmm. that's really all that they're going to get that day, maybe with a type of snack sometimes thrown in there. And then you think about those same children that go into the weekend situations and now are faced with maybe even a couple of days of just scrounging and fighting with brothers and sisters trying to get enough food. And it is absolutely heartbreaking. I've done some studying on childhood trauma. You and I have talked about before when I oversaw the work of a addiction recovery center there in Birmingham. And one of the things that it always came back to, or I would say almost always came back to, was addiction was how trauma manifested itself, your inability to cope with things. And so you drowned it out through alcohol or drugs because you couldn't cope with it otherwise. And it's just too hard to keep on your mind. We found that to be so common. And so when you peel back, there are so many childhood traumas that are taking place. And one of those is the scarcity of food.
Yeah.
We would see people who come out of prison and come back around and just scavenge, even though, and hoard food. Even though they knew that there was going to be three hot meals a day. And we tell them, you can't keep food up here for, we didn't want bugs and mice and all that other in the room. They would still hoard it. And it was, when you peel it all back, it wasn't just, well, we're disobeying the rules. Lots of times it would be like, that fear is so strong of where your next meal's coming from. And so, you and I have talked about this, about, you attack this problem. And it's such a big problem, but you attack it because it's not just a statistic of a number of children like 1 in 6. I see faces of these poor children, sometimes in urban environments, sometimes in rural environment. It doesn't matter, black, white, Hispanic. It affects everybody in poverty. And I'm telling you, it is just heartbreaking that as much food as we have in this country, to think that children are still being traumatized by
you talk about the hoarding aspect. That reminds me a lot of what a lot of depression families went through. You see a lot of families that went through the depression who are hoarders. They hold on to everything and they don't need to anymore. And I think this topic, bite by bite here with Michael Coleman, Tony Curry, I think is perfect because kids just went back to school. And I actually have a child that lives in my neighborhood down the street who I asked, are you happy to be back at school? And he said, yeah, I get to eat again. And I was like, what? And he's like, yeah, I usually don't eat lunch at home. And I didn't even want to ask any more questions, but he gets to eat lunch at school again. And I think COVID really blared a really bright light on our issues of food insecurity for children in this country, because when kids couldn't eat at school because we weren't in school for 2 years, I think that really showed really bright, didn't it?
Yeah. When you talk about logistical, through this conversation, we've been talking about logistical challenges. And so when we tend to think about that, we tend to talk about, okay, can you get enough food? Can you deliver it? Just all the nuts and bolts of that. But there's other challenges to getting kids food. And let me give you a great example. One of the things that we can do is we can partner with a local elementary school, high school, middle school, and set up a pantry so that children who are not getting enough actually can take food home. But what we found is that so often, if you set up a pantry and the teacher knows you don't have any food to take home and they go pack you up a box to take home and you're walking out or your parents walking out with that box, then children get brutally teased.
Yeah.
So you're now leaving and other kids are making fun of you. They may be just as poor as you, but now they feel better about themselves because they're mocking and ridiculing you. And then again, that's another type trauma. And so it makes you like, I don't want to go through that. So I'm not going to get the food that I need. So one of the real inventive ways that we do it, and when I say we, I'm talking about across food banking. It's not just Heart Alabama Food Bank, but it's other food banks who have to get real creative. And so you can interact with teachers who know the kids that are suffering. And so we have pantries. We provide the food. We have pantries that come together, church groups who will take Ziploc bags, pack food into that, take those to the teachers, and the teacher keeps that hidden away. And then when certain children are out, like at recess, where nobody else can know, they take that food and they'll slip that food down in their backpack.
That's great.
And so that when they go home, they'll have something to get them through the evening or get them through the weekend.
Talk about what a food bank would look like if it was just for children as opposed to families and adults. Would it just be a giant warehouse of chicken nuggets? Is that what it would be like? The first thing I think of is, listen, if I have to feed a child, I know my kid's going to go through 4 gallons of milk a week and about 100,000 chicken fingers. Can you talk about the logistics of trying to, first of all, you have to do it from a nutritional standpoint. As you get older, you don't need to drink as much milk like a child does, or at least I think they should. But can you talk about those logistics?
Yeah.
And what kids will eat because they're just plain finicky.
That's right. So we don't need to see any better example than when Michelle Obama came along with the nutrition standards of school. Now, this is not political at all, because I think she was trying to bring nutrition to kids and they need nutritious food. But what they found was, is kids simply won't eat, even hungry kids. And so they were throwing away half the food. So they ended up having to back away a little bit because kids were going home hungry because they're not going to eat it because that's what the kids do.
It's not what my parents used to say. When you're hungry enough, you'll eat it. And they're like, no, I won't. No, I'm not doing liver and onions. That ain't happening.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, and that's part of the thing. We're always fighting stigmas. And so you have some people out there who want to help. And then they're like, but it needs to be something kids are going to eat. And they're like, well, if they're hungry enough, they'll eat it. And we don't want to treat kids that way. Kids are still going to be kids regardless. You know, there's this old joke about a dog eating turnip greens. A guy takes another guy out and he puts turnip greens there and his dog just eats them all up. And the guy goes, man, I'd kill if I could get my dog to eat turnip greens. He said, my dogs would never eat turnip greens. And he goes, mine wouldn't either for the first 3 weeks. So you don't want to treat children like that, though. You don't want to starve them and say, okay, here's some food. But, you know, and so caring for the kid is saying, look, we get it. We want to provide you a nutritious meal. But more so than that, we want to get something in your stomach. Because the idea of you laying in bed staring at a wall with just deep hunger pangs is just brutal.
You're talking about the challenges in food banking. He's Michael Coleman, Heart of Alabama Food Bank. And of course, you can check them out, HAFB.org. I'm Tony Curry. He's Michael Coleman, the CEO. You put a group of people on this list that I never even thought of, and that is campus hunger. College students. I don't think anybody listening right now or watching this think, what are you talking about? They're going to college. How could they possibly hunger? Could you explain that?
Yeah. So we're just now getting into campus hunger. And here's what we found out. So some research was done in Houston with local colleges. And what they found is that a lot of kids who are coming to class did not have money for food. And ultimately, I mean, not even snack money. I mean, they couldn't feed themselves because all their money was either going to school or transportation to get there, couldn't get a job, whatever it was. And they were dropping out of school or they weren't doing as well in school. So they followed some, they created a group. And so if you had access to a Pell Grant, so they took everybody, so they were getting the same people. And they asked them, they said, do you want to be a part of the volunteer food supplement? And those that said yes were put in one category as those who said no, same backgrounds. So the people who said yes, they were given 40 pounds twice a month of fresh vegetables and food. And their success rate versus the non-food supplement people was phenomenally higher.
Wow, that's amazing.
It's really amazing. And so when you think about it, that food, and that was just one study out of many that have shown that we tend to think about. As a matter of fact, I was talking to a good friend of mine, and she said, well, what do you mean campus hunger? I mean, why didn't the parents just get them a meal card?
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, okay, that is a typical middle to middle upper class response. Look, I'm paying my kid to go to college. If he's hungry, I'm going to give him his own debit card, or he can use, I'll transfer money in his account. I'll give him a meal card. That is a normal solution for people who have resources. But when you have first generation college students, or you have people going to community colleges who are still working, trying to put food on the table, that they can't make those ends meet. And they have real decisions to make about what they're going, are they going to be able to stay in college or not? And so a food supplement to some college kids, and even kids who are coming from overseas, they can get the dollars to go to that school, but they don't have really enough sometimes to live on. So the food supplement allows them to still eat and function and learn and grow and have their minds fresh. So we've actually been amazed at how many kids have started. We're both in some of the four-year colleges and the two-year colleges. And it's just amazing the need that exists out there.
Heart of Alabama's Heart of Alabama Food Banks. Michael Coleman joins me. Tony Curry here. Bite by bite. One final group I want to get to, and then we'll let it fly. Vets. This is another group. Logistically, it's different than every other group we've talked about. Talk about how difficult it is, particularly if they're disabled. Talk about our vets we need to take care of.
I tell you, I myself am a disabled vet, although I am able to work. So thankful for that. I spent 21 years in the Army. My disability was through MS, being diagnosed with MS before I got out of the Army. And that's been a, you know, lifelong battle. But there are some people who get out of the military, go to give their life for their countries, just do incredible things. And then they come back home and they just can't function anymore because of the things that they've seen, things that they've had to face, some of the worst brutality that humanity has to offer, either themselves seeing their friends die or lose limbs or they lose it. So when you come back, there's a lot of psychological, especially all those years in Afghanistan and Iraq and just this constant war rotating through. And sometimes, even maybe not have been, but just being there three and four times before they get out, and they come back and they may have lost spouses who left them during that time. I mean, there's just tons of trauma for them to unpack. And what they find is they go to work and they can't hold down a job because they can't navigate this new world. And so lots of times you'll have vets or even vets who've gotten older in life. So you've got both younger vets and older vets who sometimes find themselves for the first time standing in a food line. And let me tell you something. Vets are a proud bunch.
Absolutely.
They are not used to saying, I need help. And so right now we're specifically working with the state VA, reaching out in our area and hopefully to do it all the way across the state. To reach out and say, look, it's okay. You're part of our community. We care about you, and we don't want anybody in our community to go without food. And so, again, another barrier is just the pride, not wanting to admit they need help, and just overcoming that and communicating with them and letting them know, look, this is not because of a failure that you are guilty of, it's just become a necessity because of the cards life that life has dealt you. And we just want to be here to help you navigate this. It doesn't mean you're going to be on food support for the rest of your life. It may just mean right now, this is the helping hand to keep you going.
Thank you, Michael. Until next time, this is Bite by Bite with Michael Coleman and Tony Curry.
Thanks, everybody.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.